Hi, everyone, and welcome back to the Killer Crime Podcast. My name is Martha, and today we've got a double case episode for you guys. So what if I told you that there were two artistic women in Canada who moved to the other side of the country, started having severe mental health issues and intense paranoia, called their parents for help, spoke to the police who decided they were fine, and then vanished? Now, what if I told you that these cases were 8 years apart and the victims didn't know of one another? So where is Emma Philippoff and Holly Clark? So I'm going to start off by talking about the case of Emma Philippoff, as it happened back in 2012. Then I'll jump into the case of Holly Clark, which happened just this year, 2020. So Emma was described by her family as being a very creative, and although she was quite quiet, she loved to laugh. She was incredibly artistic and loved poetry and photography. Her dad said she was very giving, which he felt often made people take advantage of her. She grew up in Perth, Ontario, and seemed to have a fairly happy childhood filled with art and creativity. By her 18th birthday, her parents were going through a really rough divorce. She wrote about how her dad heavily relied on her, which put her in a really tough situation. She felt that her mom pushed her away, as well as her dad. The divorce really took its toll on Emma. Now, Emma was a free spirit, and she used travel as a way to escape her messy home life. She decided to go teach English in China, and then she would go on to get her diploma in photojournalism back in Ontario. Then she decided to leave for Victoria, BC to get a diploma in the culinary arts. So Emma was always drawn to the water, so by the age of 25, she moved back to Victoria to live. She got a job in a fish and chip shop by the water, and even lived on a boat. She didn't have a lot of contact with her family, but enough. While she was in BC, she made some really nice friends, including her roommate, Michaela, who described her as being very quiet and distanced herself from a lot of people. Now guys, I totally get this. I definitely relate to Emma a lot. Not that I've been through the same life experience as her, but I understand the need to travel, get away, and be creative. I often just want to run away and hide and have genuinely thought about it so many times. I'm a British citizen, so the UK is to me what Victoria, BC was to Emma. Some of us just aren't able to stay in the one place and find it overwhelming when people rely on us too much. So, also, for those who don't know, Victoria, BC is beautiful. It's the part of the country that has these beautiful mountains. It's very scenic and has tons of beautiful views. If you love adventure and hiking and being outdoors, that's the place to go. So I can't find much detail about what happened to Emma between her living on this boat with her friend Michaela to how she ended up in the situation that she did. But she didn't talk much with her family during the months leading up to her disappearance. She actually hadn't spoken to her mom at all for quite some time. So the weirdest parts about Emma's disappearance are the days leading up to it. So I'm going to go through a timeline of the days leading up to Emma's disappearance and a timeline on the day that she disappeared. Her behaviors are just so strange. So on November 20th, 2012, video footage was found of Emma at the YMCA. Now this was just 5 days before she went missing. She was seen walking in and out of the doors 4 times, almost as if someone was out there waiting for her. On November 21st, her van is towed. So Emma arranges to have a tow truck driver pick her up from where she was staying to drive to Sook, BC, where her car was located. Apparently during this ride, she was super upbeat and she talked about how excited she was to surprise her family back in BC. So she was planning on heading back home to visit her family and surprise them. On Thursday, November 22nd, she'd written notes about these plans to move to Japan. And she wrote about how she was going to send all her belongings back home, and she was either going to stay in BC with her aunt just while she prepared for this trip, or she was going to go back to Ontario to stay with her family. On November 24th, 2012, Emma would call her mom, Shelley, in tears. Emma wanted to come home. Her mom said, "Of course, you always have a home here." But the next morning, Shelley got another call from Emma canceling the whole trip. They went back and forth for a couple of days. Emma would call her mom and ask her to come, and then call back saying she changed her mind. One night, Emma's mom decided to call the number that Emma had been calling her from, only to find that it was the number of a woman's shelter Emma had been staying at for the past 9 months. So this is what prompted Shelley to just go see Emma, even though Emma had stated she didn't want her to come. So on November 28th, this is the day where Emma would do one strange thing after another that would lead to her just vanishing. So here's a timeline of this day. So Emma had been parking her van at the Chateau in downtown Victoria. It had a notice put on it, and at 7 a.m. that morning, she heads to the Chateau to ask for another day before they tow her car. At 8:23 a.m., she arrives at a convenience store to buy a prepaid Visa for $200. Now, before I continue, it's important that you all know that Emma had a stalker back in Ontario. He loved her and he would not leave her alone. And 6 months after Emma moves to Victoria, he follows. He claimed it had nothing to do with Emma. But come on, there are so many places in the world. Why would you go to Victoria? At 10 a.m., Emma's stalker sees her standing on the street curb. He watches close by, but continues to go and get his health card as planned. When he's done, he heads back out and sees Emma still standing there. He goes up to her and asks what's wrong and if he can help her. She looks at him, says no, and backs away. This is when he decides he's officially done with her and wants nothing to do with her and walks away. Now, I know what you guys may be thinking. Martha, like, a stalker obviously has something to do with it. But he was questioned, polygraphed, and ultimately ruled out as a suspect. Now, a few people had seen Emma out and about that afternoon. One witness claimed seeing her at a soup kitchen. She went up to Emma and asked if she was okay and offered her a hug, but Emma just backed away with a terrified look on her face. Several more people stated they saw her out and about that day walking the streets and just standing around. One witness even said they saw her at the library around noon. So later in the day, Emma goes back to that same convenience store and she bought a prepaid cell phone. Now this is really weird because Emma's never owned a cell phone before. So why now? After buying the cell phone, Emma seems really weirded out. She stands by the door looking really nervous about leaving the convenience store. And again, like the YMCA, it seems like she thinks someone or something is watching and waiting for her. She eventually leaves the convenience store and gets into a taxi, but is kicked out due to insufficient funds. Now, through my research, I did discover that the taxi driver actually also asked her where she was going and she didn't even know. I wonder if she got into the taxi just to escape this person that she thought was following her. So she then ended up standing outside a hotel called the Empress Hotel. A friend she had met once saw her standing on this crosswalk, not crossing the street. So he goes up to her and asks her if she's okay. She said she was fine, but continued to look confused and out of sorts. So this friend stood with her for 30 minutes, and he eventually decided to go to a nearby restaurant and call the cops. So he actually decides to leave because he's like, you know, I called the cops, they've got this handled, I'll just go. So when the cops arrive, they ask Emma some questions, including asking her if she's suicidal or homicidal. She said she was fine and that she was just trying to get to her friend's house. So the police decided that she was all right and just let her walk off into the night. So her mom arrives in Victoria the next morning and went right to the woman's shelter that Emma had been staying at. And they said that Emma hadn't claimed her bed that night. So her mom reported her as a missing person. The police took this report right away and they started a search right away, which is good because any of you crime obsessed people know that sometimes the police are like, oh, you have to wait this long or this 24 hours or 48 hours or blah, blah, blah. She's an adult. She can leave. She can go where she wants. But they took this seriously right away, which is really great. But they came up with nothing. They focused a lot on the harbor. They walked the streets, but nothing. Emma had just vanished. So about a week after her disappearance, police discovered that a payment for cigarettes had been made on her $200 prepaid Visa. And they were able to trace it to a man who said he found it by a bridge near when Emma was last seen by police. But they polygraphed him and he was ruled out. A shop owner reported a man coming into a store with a crumpled up picture of Emma. This man said Emma was his girlfriend and he just wanted to be left alone. He leaves the store and was never seen again. Police tried to find him, but he had just disappeared. I think that is a really good suspect, you know, like the boyfriend or the ex-boyfriend. And he's walking into the store, all aggressive. And this crumpled up picture of Emma, by the way, is the missing poster of her. So he clearly had a reaction to that. So for years, nobody knew what happened to Emma or where she went. Tips would come through with people claiming they saw her on the streets in Victoria. And you know, they would say she was homeless, like all these tips would come through, but nothing would pan out. But in 2018, a witness came forward saying that he saw her on November 29th, early in the morning. His family told him not to come forward because he may be seen as a suspect, which is so frustrating because, of course, you'd be seen as a suspect. But he was driving to work, he was late, and it was a new job. So he's rushing, and he sees a woman screaming on the side of the road, looking really confused and super out of sorts. So he pulls over, and he asks her if she needs a ride. So she gets in the car, she says yes, and they're driving along. He asks her where she needs to go, and she gives the address of this friend's house. Now, because he's late and because it's a new job, he can't drop her off right at the friend's house, but he says he'll drop her off nearby. So he does that, she gets out the car, and that's the last time she was seen that we know of. So something that was super chilling about one of the things he said was he said it'd been sort of drizzling that morning, and when Emma got in the car, she was drenched, she was soaking wet. So he said that there was no way that someone could be that wet unless they'd been out all night long, because we know she didn't claim her bed that night, so she'd just been walking the streets in the rain all night. So it's been 8 years and she still hasn't been found. So is this a crime? Was it the last guy to see her? Or maybe her longtime stalker? Or was it the so-called boyfriend? Did she commit suicide like so many people think? Or did Emma simply just run away and is living somewhere remote? Her mom, Shelley, is still talking about this story to this day and often flies to Victoria to hang up flyers and look for her. She says she will never stop looking for her daughter. So that is the case of Emma Filipov. So now let's dive into the case of Holly Clark. Now this just happened this year, back in February. right before the pandemic started. So Holly was a beautiful musician who loved to play guitar, sing, and perform on stage. Her friends and family adored her and described Holly as being someone who is incredibly caring. Holly was also very artistic. She loved to paint. She did abstract paintings. Her dad even said that she loved painting like faces, and it was a huge passion of hers. So she grew up in Calgary, Canada, and growing up, she started wrestling. Now, she was able to win championships for it, and she even got a scholarship, a full ride to college. Her parents had to pay nothing. So out of all these interests she had, Holly decided to pursue her music career, and she chose to move to Toronto, Canada. Guys, I live just outside of Toronto, and where she went missing is only two towns over from me. So this case really it hits quite close to home. So Holly decided to pursue this music career, and she was able to get a band together in Toronto and even play some open mics. And it was during this time that she met her boyfriend, Randy. Her and Randy, they obviously got along quite well, and he even moved to Calgary. Holly had moved back to Calgary, and he followed her, but decided he really just didn't like it there. So the two of them moved back to Toronto. Now, Holly actually had a job in Calgary that allowed her to do her work remotely, so she was able to move around freely. So she had this band and Randy in Toronto, but unfortunately, neither of these things worked out. Her and Randy broke up, and her and the band broke up. And so she moves again back to Calgary. Now, she'd been talking to the drummer of her band, and he said that Hamilton, Ontario, has a really good scene. So this is the town that is only two towns over from me. And I've literally driven the streets of where Holly was, so this makes this case so chilling. Now, Hamilton isn't the nicest of places. It's got beautiful hikes and trails, and people often go there because there are some stunning waterfalls. But unfortunately, there's a huge drug scene, and there are places where sex trafficking occurs. So Holly contacted her family almost every day. So unlike Emma, Holly really did stay in contact with her family right up to her disappearance. She was having a lot of anxiety, and so about a year before her disappearance, she thought that one of her roommates was poisoning her. Like I said, her sister lived in Toronto, and her brother was always popping in and out, and they thought that she was delusional. So the family contacted a medical professional about this, because her dad thought it sounded a little schizophrenic. So for those of you who don't know, schizophrenia comes on mainly when women and men are in their 20s. I always thought it was like something you're born with, but no, it comes on in your 20s. But this was ruled out. So the family decided to just keep a really close eye on her. So for the entire year before her disappearance, her family was watching her like a hawk. I mean, as much as they could, considering they were living in different parts of the country. So the months leading up to her disappearance, Holly had been really upset that a love interest that she had didn't work out. So she started running, doing jiu-jitsu, and tons of activities to try and move past this heartbreak. And she continued to do gigs and play music. So on January 10th, Holly's parents get a voicemail from Holly saying this, quote, "I'm not doing so great out here. I would really like you guys to come and get me. I would really, really, really like a plane ticket out of Hamilton to Calgary, please. And I would love to come home. I'm missing you so much, and I love you so much. That's all I want in this world, is to see you and Dave, because I love you so, 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 so much. So if you could please help me out with a plane ticket, that would be really greatly appreciated." Okay, I love you and I look forward to hearing from you. End quote. She sent this voicemail and her mother called back in the afternoon. Holly was telling her that she had been running all night from two men. Now, her father said that he heard her say that she had been running all night to avoid two men, but her mother heard that she was literally being chased through the woods by two men. So they aren't 100% sure which version it is, but either way, it wasn't good. And she also mentioned that she had done something bad that she couldn't talk about. So, remember, Holly's sister lives in Toronto, so Holly's parents send her sister Kate out to see her, and Kate said that Holly was incredibly emotional, that her legs were sore, which proves that she had been running. So Kate got so anxious by the situation, she'd been there for a while, and she had to leave. So her parents asked her brother Caleb to see her. Now he'd been in Chicago, so he flew over to see her in Hamilton. When he arrived in Hamilton, she was supposed to pick him up, so she didn't. So he had to walk like an hour to go and see her. And when he arrived, she wouldn't open the door to let him in. So he walks away in frustration, and he called his parents, and they begged him to go back. So he decides to go back, but he calls the police this time. And the police show up and they ask him if he feels like she's in danger to herself or anyone else. And just like Emma, they decide she was fine and that there was nothing more that they could do. So more calls were happening with her family that evening, like between Emma and her parents. So her parents ended up speaking to someone who knew Holly, who said Holly had broken her window. This is a friend of the landlord, and this friend reassures Holly's parents that her roommates were looking out for her. But her roommate ends up calling them and saying they don't really know what to do with Holly. They didn't think there was much they could do, so the parents decided to arrange a flight out to Hamilton to see her. Now, on January 11th, Dave got a text from this roommate saying they weren't comfortable with the situation and that something needed to be done. So Dave called Holly and said that he's coming to get her, but she wasn't really having it. She hung up the phone, and 9 minutes later, she would walk out her front door and vanish. So this was around 4 p.m. on that January 11th. So Dave was incredibly concerned, so he called Holly's brother again to ask him to go back and check on her. He goes back, and this is about 2 hours after that phone call, around 6 p.m., and he found the roommate sitting around, and they knew Holly had left, but they didn't really do anything. So he organizes a search for her. He doesn't really know that she's missing at this time, but he knows that she wasn't in a good state and he needed to go and find her. So he actually also calls Holly's ex-boyfriend, Randy, to help out with the search. But they couldn't find her anywhere. Now, guys, the day Holly vanished, it was freezing, cold, and raining. And guys, we had a really bad winter over here. It was so cold and lasted ages. And Holly was only wearing a long sleeve shirt and some long pants. And she was not dressed for the weather at all. She needed to be wearing like a coat, boots, warm socks, scarf, mittens, hat. Like that is the kind of weather that we get here in Canada. It's so stinking cold. So she had her wallet on her, but not her phone or keys. And the police were able to obtain many pieces of video footage of Holly. So from the landlord, they were able to get 4 stills of her leaving the house. So he actually had a security camera pointing to the front door. So he had all this footage of Emma, but he only provided these 4 stills. So it's her kind of packing up and getting ready. And it looks like she has a backpack on her back. And then she walks out the front door and makes a right. And you can see her doing this. So this shows us what direction she was heading in. Then they found video footage of Holly at a garbage can in a nearby park that was only 200 meters from her house, and she was getting something out of it. And then they found footage of Holly going up Wentworth Street, which is one of the main streets through Hamilton. In this footage, she was seen wearing a garbage bag. Then they found she had gone up that same street again, wearing the same garbage bag and carrying another garbage bag, and it had something in it. So she clearly looped around and come back up the same street. So no one knows what was in that garbage bag or where she got it from, but she continues to carry it around Hamilton. So this is all seen through video footage. They were able to collect people's, you know, the doorbell videos, cameras that people have, businesses, they had video cameras. So they were able to kind of piece together a route that Holly took. And the last video that captured Holly was her crossing over a train track that led over to the port. But before the port, there's a street called Burlington Street that can take you east or west. So she could have been heading towards either Toronto or even Niagara Falls. So just like Emma's family, her family continues to search for her. Homeless people in Hamilton have told them that Holly was on drugs. And her family was just, while they accepted that she was on drugs, that she could have been on drugs, they were scared for her mental health. She also kept diaries where she talked about a lot about her dark experiences, just like Emma. So those are the two cases, guys, Emma Filipoff and Holly Clark, and they are eerily similar. It is disturbing how similar these cases are. So Nighttime, this is a podcast, did an amazingly in-depth version of Holly and Emma's cases. So they interviewed both the girls' parents, and I really encourage you guys to go check it out for even more information. There's also a Facebook group called Holly Clark Search, where they keep you updated with everything in Holly's case, and Emma's Facebook group is called Help Find Emma Filipoff. So I hope you guys enjoyed today's episode. Not that you can enjoy an episode about two girls who have psychotic episodes and vanish, but I hope you guys stay safe. So remember to be loud, be fierce, and don't talk to killers. The Killer Crime Podcast is created, written, and hosted by Martha Craig and Georgia Tudball. Intro music created by Music with Sagar on Fiverr, and background music created by Eric Matias at soundimage.org.